In this latest edition of the TWBC podcast, we're going to do a rather unique podcast. We've got two luminaries in the sport of tournament water skiing. We've got Matt Reaney and Whitney McClintock-Reaney, and they are both on this next edition of the TWBC podcast. Next.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all. We're here from Lago Los Moros in Santiago de Chile as part of the 2022 Pan American Water Ski Championships. This is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast, and thank you for your continued support. Well, when it came to thinking up of some new episodes for the TWBC podcast, I wanted to try and experiment with a slightly newer dynamic. Instead of interviewing just one person, how about interviewing two people? And I wanted to try and ratchet down a little bit more on that. And how about these two people being related somewhat to each other? Even better still. So with that in mind, on this episode, we've got Matt Reaney. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, Tony. How are you today?
Okay, let's try that again. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
Okay, fantastic. And what about you, Whitney?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having us.
Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff. So, the Pan American Water Ski Championships, you're the coach for the open team, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah, there's three coaches now who are taking over for Buescher. We have a manager, and then there's Cole, who's primarily responsible for the juniors, and Drew Ross and I, who are, Drew helped a lot with the juniors. Obviously, Charlie's on his team. And then, yeah, I'm here, and, you know, my primary responsibility is the U21 and the elite team.
And, of course, you'll be skiing in the open competition. Whitney, are you just slaloming, or will you be tricking or jumping as well?
Now, this is going to be my first Pan Ams, only slaloming, and my days are quite open. It feels really weird to only be skiing twice while I'm here. Okay. My last two sets of the season.
Last two sets of the season, yep. No doubt. And obviously, you're taking care of Zane as well, who's over behind me trying to catch a few Z's in the bright sunshine here.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Steve Bush. This is going to be his first Pan American Championships, not being present here and not being a part of the coaching setup. Must feel pretty weird, huh?
Very weird. And, you know, all the little things that Buescher has done over the years that gives us an advantage and makes us feel, you know, so welcome as soon as we get to a new country. I've made a list, and I've been sending him the list of lessons I've already learned since I've been here. So it's the first time without him, and it is weird. And, you know, we will figure it out.
We will figure it out. But one thing that Buescher always did was a room list and have water as soon as we got here. And yesterday I didn't have water till noon because I didn't know how to get any. And Matt comes downstairs this morning. He goes, I don't know where anybody's rooms are. We need to make a room list.
Yeah, because I had to, you know, it's like herding cats. I had to wake everybody up this morning who was on the long flight the day before. So
no one's picked up the phone and called Buescher and said, help.
No, we say, Buescher, we miss you. We love you. Wish you were here.
I talk to him all day, every day, pretty much still. He still very much does help behind the scenes with team selection, organizing rooms. It's just the brunt of the responsibility now with, you know, the high performance program in Canada is on myself and Kyle Hunter, who's the, you know, team manager on site here, and he's with Water Ski Wakeboard Canada. So he's an employee of Water Ski Wakeboard Canada.
Okie dokie. All right then. So let's try and go back years and years, all the way back to the first time that you guys actually met. I mean, you're a coach. I mean, you're an aspiring young junior skier. Describe what that moment when you first clapped eyes on the potential that Whitney had as a junior skier growing up in the sport.
Well, I mean, obviously, I've been lifelong friends with Jeff, Judy, Joel. You know, being Canadian, being from Ontario, I went to the McClintock Ski School when I was very young. So I've been close with the family for a long, long time. And obviously, you know, I started coaching Whitney when she was young, and, you know, like Jason, her brother, and with the last name McClintock, they were hungry, learned very quickly like crazy, and unbelievably competitive. So, you know, that came with the McClintock lineage. They all seem to have that in their DNA.
And how about you, Whitney? What how much do you remember about that first instance whenever you came to Matt Rini's in coaching environment in that realm?
I was really excited to ski with Matt because people around me were starting to ski with Matt more and more. And they were starting to beat me a little bit, and I wasn't impressed with that. So I was super excited with the opportunity. My dad also was in control of my skiing when I was really young, so he didn't send me off. But Jason came back from Matt's ski school when he was like 12, I think, with a whole bunch of flips that summer. So it was that winter that we started to do some flips, and we did a flip camp at Matt's place. So we started skiing with Matt.
All excellent stuff. So, moving forward, I mean, what were some redirecting to you, Whitney? I mean, what were some of those little nuggets of coaching advice that you took on right from the start that have kind of been consistent all the way through to present day?
I think a huge part of Matt's coaching is the mindset going into tournaments. He prepares us really, really well for competition. And that has been super important to Team Canada and for my career. We don't overtrain. We know how to peak and taper because that's something that we learned through being part of Team Canada and skiing with Matt. And he just prepares us mentally. He knows what to say to us to get us in the right frame of mind. And he knows how to deal with stress day of competition too. So just all of that has just kept me kind of level-headed all the way through. I mean, I had moments of freak out for sure, but he's able to keep me pretty calm all the time. So that has been the most significant thing, I think, for me in choosing him all these years.
Indeed. Has there been any instance in recent times or even way back when where there was like one of those freak out moments that you kind of had to jump in and head off at the pass a little bit, Matt?
I mean, there's not a skier on the planet that doesn't have, you know, the earth is falling syndrome going on where something, you know, the wheels are falling off the cart, and Whitney's definitely no, you know, exception to that. So, I mean, you know, there's instances, you know, I think the biggest instance was at the 2009 Worlds. I mean, not very many people know this, but Whitney had a neck injury about 7 days before, where she literally could not ski, So I actually took her to a separate lake where there was not a slalom course. We had a ski nautique, and it was her and I there and Jeff, her dad, and I made her free ski. I just had her free ski for the week before the Worlds that she won. She did not turn a buoy until official familiarization. I had her go down the line. I had her practicing at 39, and it was just removing her from the stress of everybody else training and everybody else going out and skiing, taking her away from that and just like reprogramming her brain that she was still capable of winning. And not very many people know that story, but it's the first in 7 days before the Worlds in 2009, the only buoy she turned was in official familiarization before the prelims.
And then taking the results into account, that story is all the more remarkable. Your take on that one, Whitney, and me, because I mean, when someone comes up to you and says, you know what you've been doing out the course needs a little tweaking, we're going to forget about the buoys and we're going to go free skiing. What went through your mind at that point when you heard that?
No, I mean, there was no way for me to, the intensity of slalom was too much for my neck to handle at the time. And I think the stress probably of it being in Canada, and I had a really great opportunity in 2007 at the Worlds too, where I was like on top of my game. And I wrecked my ankle in practice a couple days before the tournament. So it just felt like the world was falling. This is never going to happen for me. I was crying. I remember I was crying, and we had massage therapist Britta Llewellyn was standing there. My mom, they were all just trying to like, you can still do this. And Matt's like, no. Okay, let's separate you from all of this, and let's he had brainwashed me basically the whole season anyway into believing that this was my time, this is my world, I am prepared, I'm the best. Like, there was no doubt in my mind going into it that I could win it. But when that all happened, it did definitely take us a step back. And I trusted his process. I had been free skiing quite a bit that summer because I had been dealing with chronic neck issues all summer. So just trusting his plan and him also just getting me in the moment and focused. And literally, when I watched the videos from the Worlds in 2009, I'm like, it was creepy. Like, I'd hear the scores right before I step off the dock in tricks, and I look over at him and I smile that I had to basically trick a PB to win. But I was like, I just had the mental strength to get there.
And that was probably my voice that you heard. In those World Championships way back in 2009. And obviously that was a major, major boost for the sport in Canada, you winning not only the overall, but the tricks and the slalom. You know, I mean, you probably remember more of that as well, Matt. But I mean, I just have this recollection of you on that big old jumbotron there, just, you know, like bawling out on the dock and just encouraging Whitney along. But I mean, the impact that performance had in Canada is still very, very prevalent today, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a video of Jason and I standing on the dock when Whitney went around the corner and she got outside. It's a slow motion video. And you see me grabbing him and hugging him. And the look on my face is like, when I watch it now, it gives me chills. You know, at the time, it was an unclimbable mountain. And the only way I could get her in the zone, like, I hear all this talk about flow and whatever, but it's like, dude, the zone is like focusing on yourself. Like, everybody chases that zone or that flow, and it's like, it's so easy to get caught up in what everybody else is doing or what you think you're going to need to do. Mm-hmm. And I had to remove her from that environment of like mom, all the other people telling her she was going to be okay. It's like, no, she knows she's not going to be okay. So let's take her away, take her out of this environment. And, you know, that's how you get in the zone, is to like focus on the stuff that you can control and the stuff that you can do. And, dude, you're in your own little world, your own little bubble, because all you care about is what you're doing. And that's when you perform the best. Mm-hmm.
And I actually was in that state, like when they say flow state or whatever, in the zone, I actually remember that's one of my moments in life. The Worlds in Canada in 2009 are one of my moments where I was there. It's like very rare to experience that, but I feel like I was watching it from behind me. Like, I wasn't even the one doing it. It was so supernatural.
And I mean, back in 2009, like, Facebook was barely a thing. Twitter was barely a thing. TikTok was non-existent. All of these social media outlets. I mean, it's so, so hard these days to completely isolate yourself from a lot of the mess and a lot of the distractions that are around you. So, I mean, how much have you had to modify what each of you do going forwards in 2022?
I mean, it's not a lot different. It's just Whitney, you know, I do a lot less in Whitney's career now. Most of what I do now is in the boat, in practice, and like helping her, okay, this is my goal, this is what I want to do. The competitive side of it now with Whitney, she's like so seasoned and knows how to take care, knows what she needs to warm up. Like, this whole last season, I travel because I look after Zane so that she can focus on herself. And she's really good at that. You know, the social media side of it, it's, you know, we're the type of people that we love to see other people succeed. Like, we really genuinely love when somebody skis well and does well. You know, it's a sport. And in a sport, sometimes it goes your way and sometimes it doesn't. So it's important to be like happy for the people when they go well. So in social media, I love seeing posts of people that win, even when it's not my kid or my daughter or somebody I coach, because it's like, dude, I know the feeling of winning. I know what that person's feeling, and I genuinely feel happy for them.
And I'll add to that, I'm really, really, really enjoying the TWBC, like, after posts where it's like, oh, so-and-so did this, or this is the first time in history that this has happened. It's super exciting, because I think that those stats make people want to follow our sport more. Oh, that's never been done before. This has never been done before. You know, it brings drama and it brings excitement to see, like, oh my gosh, we just saw history yesterday. You know, at the last tournament when Will and Freddie were battling it out at 43 off for the title. Like, that's unbelievable. So that kind of thing. I think it's cool too, well, to see all the social media.
And I think you guys might be a little immune to it. But I don't think you understand the impact that TWBC has made on our sport. Like, dude, you're giving me a front row seat to see how my athletes perform in tournaments. Like, I've changed fin setups. We've worked different ski designs. We've done a lot of different things in the last 3 years because I could watch them every day from the boat. Now I can see exactly anxiety levels, adrenaline levels. I can see everything in a tournament. And don't doubt that I haven't made adjustments accordingly, because nobody, I promise you, nobody skis the same in practice as they do in a tournament. There's no way. You fly, you pay your money, stakes are on, everything's on the line. It's not the same deal. And it's so good. Hopefully the other coaches are using it, but it's so good. I go back and I watch because it's the impact you guys have made is unbelievable.
All right, then. Thank you very much for that. I do definitely appreciate those compliments going forward. Just to give our audience a little bit of an indication there, no money was exchanged in for those views.
No, we're huge Tony fans.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so you did briefly mention about your daughter's competitive action, and I want to examine how that competitive dynamic works with your wife.
Can I just say that Paige is usually done before I get to the lake? Yeah. she hangs out with Zane for one set.
Paige is on the grind in the morning. Yeah. So she, you know, how my ski school runs in the morning is I have, you know, Paige, Robert, Joel, Taryn, and Whitney. They all ski first thing in the morning. Now, Whitney comes a little bit later, but I'll answer your question because it comes up. Even like this year, they were head-to-head at the tournament in California.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely, like, everybody was texting me, who do you want to win? Who do you want to win? I'm like, dude, I win every day. Being able to spend time with my wife and my daughter every day doing what we all love is a win. When they compete against each other, it's a win. Okay? So it works great. I mean, Zane is there. Paige hangs out with Zane. Whitney hangs out with Zane when Paige is skiing. I mean, they flip-flop it back and forth. And it's, you know, like Chelsea Mills did a podcast the other day, and she just talked about the dynamic at the ski school. With the kingpins that we have skiing there, it's like the competitive juice and the level of skiing is so high every day that it just brings everybody up. So it's never, it is a competition, but it's never like a personal competition. It's just like, oh, well, Joel did this today. Well, shoot, I better freaking raise my game today. You know, it's just like, that's just the way our ski school works. So
there are days when you come down to the dock and Matt says, what are you going to do to impress me today? Or what do you say?
No, I always say, please tell me you guys.
That almost sounds like something regal, doesn't it? Impress me.
No, what do you say?
No, I always say, please do something today to make me thankful that I chose to be a water ski coach and not working at Home Depot.
Okay, AKA, do something to impress
do
me.
Do something good.
That shows that I've been, all my hard work is paying off.
Yeah, do something good. Be excellent.
And
great.
And I'm wondering why Home Depot, is there anything that...
Oh, I love the smell of Home Depot. When you go into Home Depot, that smells just like, I love it in there. Wood, tools, you know.
You into that kind of stuff, Whitney?
I tag along and just watch him buy whatever he wants to buy.
So no surprise if he comes back with like a circular saw and a new drill or something like that.
He wouldn't know how to use most
tools. I usually
tools,
borrow stuff from Jeff or ask Jeff
or
to
Cole.
Do it. Or Cole.
Cole
yeah.
has lots of tools at the ski school, and my dad always has everything in stock.
Yep.
That's his word, in stock.
All right, then. So let's turn a little bit to what you do so far as R&D for Radar. And I mean a little bit with Nautique as well, because, I mean, you work closely with the Nautique brand of Correct Craft and also for the Radar brand of skis as well. So let's start off with Nautique, because, I mean, both of you have been involved with that company for almost as long as I've known each of you for.
Yeah, so I started with Nautique back in 2004, I think right after my first Junior Worlds in 2003. They picked up my brother and me and were like, hey, these guys are going to be good, so we're going to take them on as a brother-sister duo, and they've been incredible to me my whole career. I've had a ski boat, like the best ski boat in the world to train behind, so I've been super fortunate. Then in what year did you start with Natsuki?
2010.
So, yeah, right after the Worlds in 2009, I was like, I train here all the time, and he's like the best mind in our sport, and I definitely encouraged Natique to partner with Matt, because I tell people all the time, he's the smartest man in our sport between ski design
She's
and
very
with the
biased.
Boat. No, but he and coaching. I mean, he really is so good, and so he's been a huge blessing to Natique as well.
Well, I'm a geek for knowledge, so I always like to, you know, go as deep as I can and understand something. And really, for Natique, I mean, their engineers are amazing. I mean, they've, you know, they spent a lot of time with Andy. Andy did, you know, a ton of stuff with boat design. And you know, when Andy passed on, I was asked to join and help in his place, but just help, like, kind of understand, one, what do the skiers want, and two, is our product providing that? And that's really all I do for Natique is, you know, I get with the engineers and let them know what everybody's wanting, what everybody's saying about the boat, what things are good, what things could be better, that kind of thing, and then I kind of let them do their thing. And then all we really do is go out, test a boat, you know, ski behind it. Yeah, we need to bring this person to ski behind it. Whitney needs to try it. Robert, whoever, you know. I'm not a boat expert by any means, but I am a water ski expert. So that's the information that I give to them in order for them to design the boat to be the best product it can be.
And he is very humble because, I mean, when we have new boats at our lake all the time and we're putting the hours on and making sure that they're perfect, going all over the world to every event that has Natique boats. So he's like the first man that they trust their boats to make sure that they're perfect for all the events. So
well, I prep them and get, you know, I see if there's any issues, I prep them, and then we see which one feels the strongest, which one's the best for slalom. And then, so I just go through the cluster of boats I get and set them up and make sure everything's working perfect. So when they come to the tournaments, you know, There's no gremlins or surprises in them.
All right, then. So let's move a little bit from Natique to a company that you've been involved with almost since that company formed and got involved.
Not almost.
Yeah.
Not almost. Radar.
Right from.
Just before. Just
yeah.
Before. No, so it's funny because I just did a call with Trent. There's something coming soon. I won't divulge what it is, but there's something. And so I had to walk.
Okay. Can you give us some clues here?
I don't even know what it is.
I would love to, but I probably shouldn't. I'll just keep my mouth shut, but I did get to walk through my journey with, the beginning of Radar and our transition when we were all at HO, and then HO got sold. And then, you know, we had to sit out for 10 months and then we started Radar. So that's, way back and sort of my beginnings with...
I wasn't aware of that you had to stay out of the R&D and all of that kind of stuff for nearly a year before you could form something else,
there
right?
was some non-compete clauses. I was not involved in the non-compete, but there were some non-compete clauses with Paul and Herb and some things when we first switched over. So Herb did purchase back his original, well, not his original, but his second company called Joby. And at that time, hired Andy Mapple. And so that's really when I got to roll up my sleeves with Andy and spent a lot of time with Andy in that first before he went back to O'Brien and then eventually started Mapple. So I did get to spend, in my opinion, my early years was with Herb O'Brien and Andy Mapple. So those are the influences that I was able to tap into to kind of learn not only things that they had done, but the process of how they bring the greatest skis to the market. So, you know, and what do I do now? I mean, Chris Rossi's the main ski designer that sits with our programmer. And Rossi's the one who makes the decisions on the size of the bevel, the side cut of the ski, and him and the programmer, who the programmer's just as crucial as the guy who's the ski guy, because the programmer has to take what the ski guy's doing and put it into a reality and understand all the compromises that happen in a three-dimensional design.
It almost sounds like office space.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, so again, what do I do? I mean, I'm boots on the ground. I'm the guy watching people trying to run 41 off and the girls trying to run 39 off and the girl trying to run 41 off here sitting beside me every day. So I can see, you know, I understand how the boats work. I understand how the zero off works. I understand what the boats let you do and don't let you do. I understand what they need at 41 off. And so I convey that message to Rossi. And we say, hey, where are we short on this ski and where are we moving on the next ski? And then I kind of leave the, you know, oh, I might make a suggestion. Oh, the tunnel needs to be this or the bevel needs to be this. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what the numbers are. That's Rossi's job. But I'm kind of the one that says, hey, this is the overall general what we're missing. You know, hey, your Formula One car, it can't handle the corner at 175 miles an hour. We need a car to handle a corner at 175 miles an hour. Then Rossi, you know, takes it, does his deal, and gives it back, and then we go from there.
And what's your take on that? Because I mean there are certain design philosophies. I mean, you could design a high performance ski that would allow you to run some of the earlier passes, you know, like medium passes, or you could design a ski that's really, really effective from about 39, 41 off and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah,
for sure. I mean, when we get a ski that's really good at 32 off, we're like, that's not right. We don't want it there. Yeah, if I go out and I'm feeling really good at the early passes, I know that, well, it's not for sure, but a lot of times it'll start feeling better as the rope gets shorter if it's exactly what we really want for the ski. And so that's what Matt is so good with, because we have had skis in the past that are amazing for, you know, middle rope, like 35, 38. I could run amazing 38s, you know, and then it's not necessarily as good for 39 and 41. And you don't really recognize that, I think, in the moment when you're just competing, and then you switch skis and you're like, oh, this feels really good. I'm going to stick on this one. But then eventually you might need something different, you know, moving forward. If your technique just gets a little bit better, you just need a little bit more speed crossing the wakes or something like that. So I'm super thankful that Matt is like involved in every part of the companies that I work for too, because I don't think a lot of people have that opportunity where you literally can change, you can have the ski that you need for your technique. And Matt's essentially in the trenches and helping to create that for me. So I'm super thankful for that. But yeah, we both started with the company right away when it started, and really good to be part of the Radar family, because it really is a family.
Yeah. And so we, of course, you know, Chris Sullivan ran Radar for a long time. Good old Louisiana redneck fishing with a mullet off of a ski. If you've ever seen that picture, it's one of the greatest water ski pictures of all time.
I think I might have seen that, but I think Texas claims him more than Louisiana.
No, I know, but he cut his teeth in Louisiana. And then now we have Brooks Wilson. And so Brooks is unbelievable. Brooks is really like forward thinker, you know, hey, what do we need? You tell me what we need, and we're going to get whatever we need, whatever you guys need to get the products you want. And that kind of support from a manufacturer is unbelievable, because, there's one thing that I've learned recently, and when I say recently, like in the last 5 years, is there's feel versus real. And as our team grows, and as our team has a lot of input from lots of people around the globe when we're testing skis, there's a lot of people that feel certain things. Mm. But for me, all I do is I look at a shape and I see what did our top guys do on this shape? Did we get better on this shape or did we get worse? Because as a coach, I'm 100% that if you have the best ski in the world on your feet, you don't need to learn how to ski on it. There's not like, oh, but if I just do this, it could be better. No. It's like I always assume when something's not easy for somebody that it's the product that's on their feet. That's just my assumption when I'm dealing with the top 1% of the sport. You know what I'm saying? I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about the top. The girls that are running 39, the guys that are almost running 41, it's feel versus real. So when it's real, the scores go up, the consistency goes up, the tournament wins go up, the prize money goes up, everything goes up. When it's, oh, this feels really awesome, but then the scores are down, to me, it doesn't matter how it feels. Because since watching from TWBC, there's like what you guys think you might want on your feet and what you need on your feet. And what you need on your feet doesn't always feel amazing. Yeah. in a really strong headwind at 35 off, you know? So, I mean, that's kind of where I've evolved with this. It's like feel versus real. I've ridden so many skis that feel amazing, and dude, I can run beautiful 35 offs on them, but it's like at 41 off, it's not about like, oh, I want it to feel really good. It's like, I needed to do X, Y, and Z, and I'll get there. Don't worry about what it feels like earlier.
Yeah, and there has been moments in our skiing where he's like, if you do this on this ski, does it let you... You know, does it let you do that? And that was a time period in design. And I was like, well, I've never really thought about exactly what I want my ski to do, because I just, you know, you feel whatever's under your feet and you adapt. We adapt so quickly. You try a new ski and you adapt within 6 passes, usually, to where you can, you know, run something on it or pretty darn close to what you run on it. So that was interesting when he started saying that to me, and he's like, well, what do you want it to do? So that then it gives him information to what our next ski shape might be.
That almost sounds like the title for an upcoming autobiography. So are we going to be expecting that on the bookshelves there, feel versus real?
Yeah.
Ned's not a writer.
No. I'm good at podcasts, but article, you know.
He writes an article once in a while for Water Ski Nation, and he sends it to me. Hey, hon, can you...
Yeah, I always tell Greg it's with my chief editor. She'll get back to us as soon as she wakes up.
Because he voice texts it, and then I have to put all the periods and the question marks and everything into it.
Hey, come on. I want people to think I'm smart when they read those articles.
Well, one of the greatest water ski books of all time was The Complete Guide to Water Skiing with Joel McClintock.
Joel McClintock.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
And I wish I still had my copy, because if I'd ever clapped eyes on Joel McClintock in my travels, I would have asked him to autograph it. But I mean...
You need to have him on your podcast.
Well, yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to.
I'll make it happen.
Absolutely. So, I mean, taking that into consideration, both of you have read that book, no doubt, cover to cover. I mean, is there anything, and I mean, that was published in about the early 80s, I would say about 79, 80 type deal. Is there still any portion of that book, as far as you can remember, that is as relevant today as it was back then?
I think probably a lot of there's tricks in that book too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's lots of, I mean, we're still skiing old school, right? Like we still have the old school.
Yeah, I mean,
body
I think if you look at like back in the day, what people were trying to do behind the boat, I don't think ultimately it's very different. Mm-hmm. The products are really different and the boats are very different, and people are a lot, you know, more in tune with that kind of thing, because now we have a computer that drives the boat. So it's not like you're waiting for mom or dad's time at the end of the lake. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pull's exactly the same no matter where you go. So, I mean, I think everybody's been able to refine that quite a bit. But if there's one resounding thing, or, okay, let me just say this. If there's two resounding things that are really, I mean, from that book or that generation, one is the posture that you stand on a slalom ski, and two is the posture that you stand on a trick ski, which today is not quite as prevalent when you see trickers standing, because now we got these hard boots that prop you up, and you got like this great big toe hold and a great big heel strap. Like when we learned how to do toe tricks, you weren't getting slack because the foot thing would slide off, the toe hold would slide off. We didn't have a heel strap. So I think those two things like kind of stand the test of time, you know, I really do.
That's actually really interesting that he said that, because I was just talking to my ballerina cousin the other day, okay? And she says to me, this is Natalie, she says, you know, I was watching a couple people ski today and their arms are just all over the place. That cannot be good for their balance. She's like, she's a ballerina from a totally different world, but she water skis a little bit and she's been tricking. So she's finding her center. But the fact that she noticed the arms, I was like, well, funny you say that, because that's one of Matt's big things that he talks about when you're doing toe tricks.
Yeah, you know Ben Terp, the English
kid? Of course
I
do, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so Ben skied with me a couple years ago, and like the first toe set he did, I'm like, boy, what are you doing with your arms? You're flopping them all over the place. So I just kept telling him where to put his hands, where to put his arms. And at the end of it, he goes, man, toe tricks is way more about your hands than it is about your toes, isn't it? I laughed so hard when he said that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, my recollections from that book were three things. The the toe hold sequence, the toe 360 wrapping from Craig Llewellyn, God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
The picture right at the end of the book with Ricky McCormick doing a backflip on a Cypress Gardens trick ski.
Yeah.
And the advice from Joel, like, never jump at 6 foot.
Never do it.
Did you see the skis, Joel, and bindings he used to jump on?
Yeah, that was probably a good reason why.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, going on from that and going on to present day jumping, obviously, mm-hmm. you two are training and coaching the world overall men's champion, Joel Poland, and the current world jump champ, not the world jump champion, but certainly on the podium, mm-hmm. current Masters jump champion. And I mean, when did he first come to your ski school? And what was your first impression?
So what happened was Mike Ferraro was working with the British Federation, and him and Stevie Glanfield, who still runs a ski school in Oxford. Yeah. So they got together and they did a flip camp in Florida with all these junior British kids. They brought them to Ryan Jones, who's a trampoline guy, taught him how to do flips on the trampoline, took him out to OWC behind a wakeboard boat and taught him how to do a flip. While they were there, Rob Poland, his dad, called me and said, I want to come and ski with you. So I said, okay. I didn't know he had a kid. I didn't know anything. So Rob was there for the week, came and skied two sets with me every day. And Rob and I hit it off. Like, we were instant good friends. Like, we just had this, this magic between us. And like, so while he was there, I said, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, my kid's here. Who's your kid? His name's Joel. Okay. Hmm. He said, I want to bring him to you. And I think Joel was 10 or 11. Like, he was young. So I said, sure, no problem. I said, does he do everything or does he just trick? No, he does all three events. Okay. So Rob said, I'm going to work it out and send him to you. So he came with them. So this would have been in the fall. He came with them like in February, at their half term or whatever. So this is like a few months later. I knew Rob was there. It's February. It's not that busy. He pulls up. Rob gets out. I see this fat little kid get out of the car. Like, he's chubby. Seriously chubby. He walks up and introduces himself to me. And I said, hey, nice to meet you. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this kid? Right? So I'm like, oh, man. Aww. Okay.
Oh, he's cute.
I love him. Anyway, and he loves when I tell this story too. So I said, you want to slalom? Yeah, slalom. So I go, he slaloms, and his first pass, like, he's got the most perfect lean behind the boat. Body position's perfect, leaning strong behind the boat. The kid just looks like crazy good behind the boat. I mean, he was a little clumsy in the turns because they'd been skiing in England. And so I asked, who's he ski with? Oh, John Battleday. Okay.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense. That's why the kid looks good behind the boat. Anyway, so yeah, he skied and like impressed me. I'm like, wow, this kid's a really good slalom skier. Like, I can't even remember what he ran or didn't run, but he really impressed me. And then, of course, he got his trick ski out and
other foot forward.
Yeah. It took me two sets to notice it, by the way, because if you ever watch in the mirror, everything's backwards in a mirror anyway.
Yeah.
So it took me a little bit. And then I was standing up demonstrating something to him. And I'm like, he goes, no, I turned the other way. I'm like, what do you mean you turned the other way? And he goes, I'm doing my toe or something the other way. And I'm like, I knew he was left foot forward. I just watched him slalom, you know? And then, oh, you're right foot forward? And I look at his dad and his dad just shakes his head like, don't ask me. I don't know what's wrong with this kid. Anyway, so
it explained a lot about toe tricks. He really
sucked at toe tricks.
Teaching
that kid toe tricks was like literally one of the, it's like pushing a giant boulder up a hill. And if you take your hands off that boulder for 1 second, it's going right to the bottom again. And I'm like, the hell am I going to do with this kid? Anyway, so, but that week, I think he learned 4 flips maybe or 5 flips in 1 week. It was just like, and of course, you know, with Joel, I mean, everybody knows him now, but he's always been that charismatic, charming kid. And him and I just were like, you know, gas and a spark. Like, we were just, I give him crap, he responds. Like, John really programmed that kid to take abuse, let me tell you, because I still give him abuse all the time. But you know, just joking, of course. But so no, it was just like, and Rob then, once he came that one time, Rob flew him out 6 times that year. So I went to the airport, unaccompanied minor, picked him up. He stayed with me, skied for a couple weeks, go home. And so he came 6 times that first year I met him. And I mean, he kind of set the world on fire after that. I mean, it was at every level.
Now, I mean, it was pretty chunky then. So I'm sure someone said to him, you know, if you want to try and get to a certain spot,
I don't think anyone said it.
You're going to have to take that weight off, or at least be a little bit leaner? I mean, what's your take on
that? I think puberty probably happened and it took care of everything.
Because, yeah, I mean, he just grew. And if anybody wants any pictures of chunky Joel, you can reach out to Freddie Winter. He puts them on his story every once in a while, but he will gladly send you pictures of chunky Joel. But nah, I mean, it's very common for kids
young boys before puberty, especially, to be
and
chunky.
Then now he's just like, he's been ripped for a lot of years. It's just like go through puberty and, mm-hmm. you know, he grew and the midline shrunk and he got muscly and now he's like probably the most athletic human, you know, barring maybe Aaron Rathie back in the day, but he's just his athleticism. I mean, he just posted a video today about him on one of those foils and like he's never been on a foil before today. I guarantee he's been on it a couple of times. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know, floating. He'll be a foil expert by the time he gets back from New Zealand.
All right, then. So anything to add to all of that? Because, I mean, we're talking, how long ago were we talking when you first met up with
him? It would have been 10, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. 10, 11 years ago. Yeah. So, I mean, like basically right after you'd won.
Oh yeah, because we had just gone to the new lake, so it was right around
2010-ish.
So I've gotten to watch the whole process, and he's very accurate in everything that he said. I mean, as far as him coming to the ski school, and I mean, I always loved little Joel. Like whenever he was there, everyone just loves Joel. Anytime any parents that come to the ski school fall in love with Joel. My grandma is in love with Joel. She's just like, oh, he's just the nicest boy. She can't remember his name, doesn't know what he does half the time, but I mean, she's just like, that was a nice, really nice boy. I like him. Like, he can come over for dinner anytime, but he's just a sweet, sweet kid. And, I mean, my son loves him, and he's like how many kids would that be? Fifth kid.
Yeah. Well, and I'll give everybody a little secret to his success, and it's probably not what everybody thinks it is, but I can promise you, and this is no word of a lie, in all the years that he's come to ski with me and I've seen him, he's never one time, not one time, come to the lake in a bad mood. I've never seen him grumpy after he skis, whether it's good or bad. It's like he is the ultimate person in, like, you know, everything just ebbs and flows. Some days I'm going to slalom like a king, and some days I'm not going to slalom like a king. Some days I'm going to jump really far, and some days I'm going to feel really bad. And, like, he never lets any minor little setback ever change his attitude, his outlook, or his climb to the top. It's like insignificant. It's as insignificant as it is if he skis well. And that is that kid's secret sauce, is just he's in a good mood all the time. And it's because he chooses to be. It's not because he's Joel and life is easy for Joel.
Yeah.
Joel works his butt off.
He does.
And Joel has a lot of disappointments too, believe it or not. I mean, they're not all in tournaments because he skis pretty good in tournaments, but you know, just training and trying to get to that next level.
And always trying to be a better person. I think he truly does want to be a better person all the time. And he is. I mean, he's an amazing person on top of being the best skier of our sport, too.
All right, then. Let's talk about the two of you together. You two have been married for how long now?
It'll be 5 years on Sunday.
Oh!
5 years on Sunday.
Yes,
yeah. I knew
Sunday.
This was a good time to do this podcast.
And that's why we're skipping the banquet, because we want to go home for our anniversary. So we land on the 4th on our anniversary.
And we're going for dinner at the boathouse like we always do. It's our tradition. We've gone every year. We closed it down the night we got married, having way too much fun with all of our wedding guests. And we've gone there ever since, every year for our anniversary.
All right, then. So kind of describe that whole deal. I mean, how you decided between the two of you, you being the coach, you being the high level pro skier, that you thought one day, you know, maybe this relationship, you know, can be upgraded instead of being coach and skier to husband and wife type deal. I mean, give us details on that.
Ironically, I moved to Orlando back in 2006 to go to UCF because I wanted to ski with Matt Moore. And to me, that's ironic, because obviously he was not my husband at the time and it wasn't my boyfriend at the time. But I find it interesting that I moved for him. Like, I moved to Claremont to be with Matt, just to ski with him. But then skiing together all the time and being at such a high level, I was naturally attracted to him as my coach, always. Zany's waking up. I feel like that was interesting that I moved to Orlando to be closer to Matt, to ski with him.
Okay, and whilst Whitney sprints off to check on Zane, what was your take on that one? Because I mean that must have been an interesting dynamic to kind of take on board a little change of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And like life always, it never goes the way you think it's going to go. I mean, I think everybody can relate to that. Looking back now. One of the big things that that Whitney has taught me and helped me to be a better person is just my relationship with God and meeting our pastor, who's my life coach. I call him my life coach. I don't really treat him like a pastor. I treat him more like a really good friend. And she brought me to the church. She knew Wes, our pastor, before. And, you know, all I can say is that, you know, I think that God has a huge plan for all of us. And I think that it's been, now we have Zane and watching the relationship with my children, with Zane, and the impact that he's had on everybody's lives. And, we do these, marriage Bible studies sometimes, and like, we're really unusual in that we spend all day together. You know, like I go to the lake in the morning for a couple hours. We're at the lake together. We're at the lake with Zane. We come home, you know, and we just spend a lot of time together. And so we've really learned how to appreciate each other, how to bring out the best in each other.
Because not many married couples actually have that kind of dynamic. I mean, normally it's like the husband that goes to work somewhere in town, right. and the other person, if he or she does work, it's normally somewhere else, you know, or
yeah,
either at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? And so, you know, like we don't really fight. I mean, we don't really argue unless she really backseat drives a lot. Then I might snip at her or bark at her. Because it's just weird that I can get to the lake every day without having her in the car. But then the days that I take her, I really need her or else we're all going to die type of deal. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kidding. Anyway, so no. And I just think that, I'm just super appreciative of what she brings to my outlook on things and, a piece of accountability to keep pushing myself in the sport. And, it's been a really, really enjoyable 5 years together, you know, really enjoyable.
Indeed, indeed. And I mean, obviously, both of you have thought about what could potentially happen in the future. I mean, you've got one kid, Zane.
Don't go there.
Don't go there.
No, I'm kidding.
There was always a plan for number two, but at this point, this kid is like the light of our world, and he's so wonderful, and he fills up my days in all the good, best ways possible. I don't know that right now number two is a necessity to complete our lives, so that's just where we're at, and discuss it again next year and see, but for
Mama still has some pretty lofty goals in the sport.
Yeah.
And like we kind of talk that, you know, like it was what 16 months really of like when you get pregnant to when you can really ski again.
Well, and then I backed that up with a concussion, so that was another whole injury situation,
right.
Like I was really getting close to where, yep, I was skiing amazing, and then I got my concussion, and then that...
It's just a setback.
This year has been just as hard coming back as it was last year coming back from having the baby, so...
Yeah, again, like, life never really kind of goes the way that you write it out in your plan, you know?
You know, I was hoping to go all the way through this podcast without even touching upon that whole concussion deal, because, I mean, even earlier on this season where you skied at the Travis Grand Prix, I mean, I think you even made a point to say, I'm over the hump, you know... the beast has been exercised a little bit.
Well, I mean, I knew that skiing at Jack's was going to be a huge hurdle for me this year, and so I avoided it. I skied in other lots of other tournaments. I skied really well at other tournaments. But Jack's was one that I wasn't sure. I have flashbacks regularly from my crash. And so...
Oh, and by the way, everybody should know that Jax is her favorite lake to ski on.
It is. It's definitely been one of my favorite lakes. My personal best is there. So now moving forward, now I feel like Jax Grand Prix was a huge moment where, okay, I ran my 39, and really going into it, obviously I could have been on the podium. I should have been on the podium with how we skied that weekend. But realistically, I accomplished what I wanted to going into that weekend, which was running 39 again. I even ran 2 at 41, which was, I got past that one ball, you know. So moving forward next year, I want to ski at Jax as much as I can, leading up to the Worlds.
Okay, so obviously the goal is the Worlds. Anything else? Maybe the season long Pro Tour title, or possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ultimately we're putting our sights on my end goals for my career, which is running 41 off. And in doing that, I think a lot of success will follow it next season. But I think we're just going to turn our direction inward again and just really focus and put the hammer down, because, I mean, time's running out for me if I want to have another child, if whatever. But it's just something that has literally been on my agenda for my whole career. And it's something that I know is within grasp. It's possible. And it's just a matter of getting it done and then enjoying my skiing after that, whether I decide to continue to be professional or not.
Well, and too, Tony, the thing is, we didn't go to Europe this year because we had a couple weddings to go to. Whitney's cousin, who was the maid of honor in our wedding, got married, Jamie, so it was really fun to go there. And then John Lex Kinnerly, mm-hmm. who you know,
yes,
a skier, got married this year, and I didn't want to miss his wedding. So, but next summer we will be going to, not all, but we're definitely going to go to Botas and definitely going to go to San Gervasio next year.
Oh, you'll love that.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I've never been to San Gervasio.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll love it just for the cheese.
Yeah. Zane might like it too.
Yeah. Zane likes cheese. So. But no, so, you know, obviously, if you're not going to all the tournaments, it's hard to win for the season.
Yeah,
right?
was a big wake-up call this year, actually, because Regina and I mean, we didn't do too poorly over here, but there was no way of catching Jamie when she got home from Europe, so.
Yeah, I can just imagine Zane's eyes, you know, going wide open when he sees a great big plate full of mozzarella. He's going to absolutely love it.
And pizza. He loves pizza.
Oh, absolutely. So we'll try and round off the podcast a little bit, but I got one more question. Obviously the answers that to my questions have been highly agreeable, mostly, but has there ever been something that you seriously remember that you two totally had disagreements about?
I mean, you know, it's no secret that Whitney was extremely feisty in her younger years, you know, and so we used to fight quite a bit about water skiing and training and everything. And like, you know, like I said, she brought a lot of really good things to me. And I, you know, with, you know, when you ski at a lake with Joel Poland and Paige Reaney, who's like exactly the same as Joel as far as her attitude every day, showing up, being happy, good days, bad days, the girl's always got a smile on her face. Like, I think that impacted, you know, if I'm honest, the only thing we ever argue about ever since I've known you is about water skiing. And in the last like 5-6 years, we don't.
And driving, that really.
Well, she, yeah, I mean, but I mean, that's
we
just
argue
a wife
about
thing.
Driving probably more than anything.
She's
to be honest.
It's just a wife thing, I think.
But about. What he's saying is, when I came along, I was McClintock through and through, and that means you get mad after you ski bad, and you sometimes occasionally might throw your stuff, and you are like competitive beyond belief. If you don't win, it's definitely not a good day. And it's everybody else's fault. Like, that to me was my attitude. And I'm not saying that it was a bad attitude, because the McClintocks won a lot, you know? Like, when I was younger, I won more than I do now. But but being part of the Reaney family now, I'm super blessed to learn that manners are super important, and that saying please and thank you and being appreciative and gratitude and all of that is super important. And Matt has taught me that pretty much single-handedly, and it got displayed to me. Sharing has been displayed to me best by his children and now this little one. But there are things that I don't know. What do we fight about? We don't really fight, to be honest. We really don't fight. In the car is the only time we fight, when I tell him he sucks at driving and he's doing something wrong.
Or
when I'm on the phone with our insurance company and I'm like, babe!
To my defense, I have spent most of my life in a moving vehicle where I'm not looking where I'm going the whole time. I'm always looking behind me. So sometimes I jump in my car, I will admit, and I end up driving like the boat where I've got 100 things going on, including my cell phone. I know I'm horrible. But anyway, we don't really fight. I mean, you know, we kind of have pretty common goals in life, really common goals with our kid, really common goals with our business, really common goals with her future in skiing and real estate. And I support her.
I support him, too. Yeah, we're encouragers.
It's like we're team each other, I guess. Yeah. It's boring. I'm sorry.
Sorry,
but
there's
it's
no
just
drama
the
in
way,
this household.
It's just the way it is.
When Matt and I raise our voice at all, just in discussion, Zane starts telling us, no.
Yeah.
And we're not even fighting. We don't even think of, I don't know.
No.
No.
And just a quick reminder that this isn't couples therapy or anything like that.
Nope.
We have a really good therapist, Wes Beacham.
Yeah. He's our pastor.
All right, then. So we'll round off the podcast there. Anything you'd like to say in the parting to your fans? Start with you, Whitney.
Just thanks to my family and my sponsors for always being there for me and watching me and tuning in. And TWBC has made that easier for all my people to watch me. So thank you, Tony.
All right, then. What about you?
I mean, I just thank my sponsors, obviously, Nautic and Radar, and, you know, my family. And you know, I'm totally blessed to be surrounded with amazing people. You know, my own kids and other people's kids and the people that I train. And so, you know, I'm very thankful that everybody trusts me with, you know, their most prized thing, which is their water skiing. So I'm appreciative of that.
All right. Then that was the latest edition of the TWBC podcast with Matt Reaney and Whitney McClintock Reaney. Another podcast episode will be released soon. But until that time, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao. For now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.